Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. New Hampshire bills itself as having a terrain for all seasons. The mountains offer climbing and skiing, the forests shelter innumerable hiking trails, and the lakes and rivers draw people in summer and winter alike. Everyone has their favorite spots, often with a good story of how they discovered it. But there are other, older stories behind the places we hike or drive past every day. Here to tell us more about some of the state's best-kept secrets is Lucy Breyer. She's author of a new guide called Exploring Southern New Hampshire, History and Nature on Back Roads and Quiet Waters. Lucy, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
So in a state with so many natural resources and attractions, how do you even begin to pick for a guidebook like this?
It was difficult, but I started with what I know and what resonates with me. And I've lived in southern New Hampshire my whole life, and I consider it just from the Monadnock region to the Merrimack Valley to the seacoast. I consider it all my big backyard. And so I just have been out exploring for years.
A lot to do in your backyard.
Definitely.
Well, why focus on southern New Hampshire, though? Most people seem to head straight for the mountains, and that's certainly where some of the most famous attractions are.
That's for sure. My approach was to give some attention to those areas that don't receive as much press, if you would. There are some people that are maybe visiting in southern New Hampshire who have lived here for a long time and don't have a full day to devote to go north or to do a full mountain hike. But the type of sites that I've written about are those that you could do in a half a day sometimes, or maybe just as you're wandering through or driving by, you can stop. So there's shorter, quieter sites, I guess you would say.
Well, okay, so you cover three regions here, Monadnock region, the Merrimack Valley, and the Seacoast. Monadnock stands out in more ways than one. The trails are almost always busy. What do you think makes it such a popular site?
I think one of the big attractions about Monadnock is it is so accessible. So you can drive up to the trailhead, park your car. You don't have to have a lot of gear. You can get to the top with a minimal amount of effort. It's about a 3 to 4 hour hike. But then when you get to the top, the rewards are just unbelievable because the top 500 feet of the mountain are clear. So that affords you beautiful views, 360-degree views on a clear day, of course.
I'm reading about all of the different attractions in that region, from the Cathedral of the Pines in Ringe, the Pickety Place, Uncle Sam's House in Maple Sugaring, Purgatory Brook Falls, very interestingly named. How is it that so many things are right in our midst and we know so little about them?
I think what happens is that we are in a rush to get from point A to point B so many times, and we're driving by these sites that are really not far off the road. If people were to stop their car, get out, look around, don't be afraid to drive down a dirt road, don't be afraid to get a little lost. It's amazing what you'll find within a half mile even of the major thoroughfares in southern New Hampshire.
It is so surprising to me because New Hampshire is not particularly low key about its attractions. I don't know. We just don't see historic markers or something like that for many of these sites that you discovered.
We don't. We don't do a great job of signage. Somebody might take offense to that, but we really don't do a lot of signage and information and wayfinding in our state. Half the time, you don't know if you've arrived at the spot that you're looking for. So you need to get out of your car, see what's there, and you'll really be amazed.
Well, the intrepid Lucy Breyer is with me. She's author of A New Guide to the History and Nature of Southern New Hampshire. Okay, so let's go to the Merrimack Valley. Would you call a sort of comeback kid? What do you mean by that?
Well, it's interesting. In the Merrimack Valley, what we found is that we destroyed so much of our natural sites. Unwittingly destroyed. We polluted rivers. It happened all over the state, but particularly in the Merrimack Valley.
With the building of mills, you mean?
With the building of the mills. The mills brought a huge population. With the population came more roads. Now we have strip malls. We have big box stores. All of that. Why I call it the comeback kid is because there has been a concerted effort to bring back some of those natural resources. So we have the Nashua River, for example. At one time, it was biologically dead. It was one of the top 10 dirtiest rivers in the country, and the federal government had classified it as a Class U, which is unsuitable for the transport of waste.
Ooh.
And today, it's one of the most beautiful sites to kayak in all of the Merrimack Valley, as far as I'm concerned.
There was a story of particular appeal to me because I'd never heard about it. A history-making sawmill at Turkey Pond. That's right here in Concord, New Hampshire. What happened there?
That's a beautiful, beautiful pond. If you've never been, you need to go. Turkey Pond borders St. Paul's School, and it's about 335 acres there. And what happened in this region in 1938, a big hurricane ripped through all of New England, and it brought down a ton of lumber in our state, so much so that the lumber industry was on the verge of collapse. So the National Forest Service stepped in and said, we're going to help you save your lumber industry. And what we want you to do is to take all these trees that fell and submerge them in the waterways throughout the state. I couldn't understand why would you do that, but they had a reason, of course. It was to protect the trees from insects and from fire until they could be milled into lumber. Turkey Pond was the biggest repository for the fallen trees in the entire state. They created a sawmill on the pond, and everything went well for a few years, and you know they were turning out lumber. And then World War II broke out, and suddenly there was a shortage of men to work at the sawmills. So the people at the Forest Service decided to recruit women to work in the sawmill. And this was something that was totally unheard of at this time. Now, we're talking 1942.
Sort of pre-Rosie the Riveter, even.
Well, it had entered our consciousness, but people certainly did not believe that women could mill lumber.
I love what they called them, Lucy. The
Lumber Jills. Lumber Jills. Yes, I love that.
Yes. Just a wonderful story.
Right. Yeah.
In our very midst, my mom grew up at St. Paul's School, and I had no idea about this.
Yeah.
You know, the Seacoast is probably the most well-known history out of the three regions that you cover, colonial history, you know, buildings, and the first midnight ride of Paul Revere. What?
Well, it's true. We had, on the Seacoast in Portsmouth, there was a fort. Of course, there were seven forts that were built to protect our seacoast in and around Portsmouth. And Fort William and Mary was built in the 1600s. And over time, it became a main munitions post for the colonies. And when King George heard of unrest in the colonies, this now goes to the 1700s, of course, he decided to send troops to take the munitions away from the fort so that ammunition would not get into colonist hands. So in some, I don't know how this happened, but in some way, the people in Boston heard of this. Paul Revere heard of it. He got on his horse and rode to Portsmouth.
And just kind of his thing, wasn't it?
Exactly. December of 1775, and he rode to Portsmouth to warn the colonists that the British were coming to take the ammunitions from the fort. So they gathered about 400 people to ride out on gundalows and secure the fort.
Well, you point out that you can still take gundalow rides on the Piscataqua River there in Portsmouth Harbor. So, Lucy, any advice on where somebody starts? I mean, would you pick an area? Would you pick a path? Would you start with history or a hike? Any ideas?
I think it depends on your personal interest, and that's part of what I tried to bring into the book so that there are some kayaking and canoeing sites. Maybe that's not your thing. There are some walking trails. Maybe that's not your thing. Maybe history is what interests you. So start where you're interested and then pick an area. And I can almost guarantee there's going to be a variety of all of that within one area. I mean, if you choose the town of Exeter, which doesn't seem like a back road area, but we have there an Abraham Lincoln walking tour. If you're a history lover, that's great. If you're not, you can put a boat into the Exeter River. If you prefer a walking trail, Phillips Exeter Academy has walking trails. So it's that type of thing. If you just select one specific area, I can almost guarantee you're going to find a lot of sites that'll speak to your own interests.
Was there one big discovery for you here when you were working on this book?
I did learn about a trail in Peterborough that is fairly new. Basically, this trail will take you from downtown Peterborough to the base of Pakmanadnock. And I had no idea. I mean, this just opened 2 years ago.
Walking, biking, both?
Walking.
Yeah.
A walking trail.
It's the thing about New Hampshire. You just have to kick a few rocks around before you find out what's going on.
That's for sure.
Well, thank you for coming out from under that rock and telling us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lucy Breyer is author of Exploring Southern New Hampshire History and Nature on Back Roads and Quiet Waters. You're going to find a link to more on her book and some of the sites that we talked about at wordofmouthradio.org.